From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a special report on Ukraine.
We talked about the largest threat that Ukraine faces today, and that is Russia's continued aggression in the east.
That was U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry Thursday in Kiev, accusing Russia of aggression in eastern Ukraine and urging Moscow to uphold the Minsk agreements signed last September. Kerry was in Ukraine to promise more U.S. support, including lethal weapons for the Ukrainian armed forces. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President François Hollande joined Kerry in Kiev Thursday. Paris said it has a fresh proposal for a permanent ceasefire in eastern Ukraine. Merkel and Hollande then shuttled to Moscow Friday to hammer out the new proposal. The West has accused Russia of supporting militias in the breakaway regions of Donetsk and Luhansk in eastern Ukraine. Moscow denies any involvement in the conflict. Friday's meeting in Moscow came a year to the day after an intercepted phone call between two senior U.S. officials was released to YouTube, exposing the hidden hand of the U.S. in what became a coup d'etat 2 weeks later.
What do you think?
I think we're in play. The Klitschko piece is obviously the complicated electron here, especially the announcement of him as deputy prime minister. And you've seen some of my notes on the troubles in the marriage right now, so we're trying to get a read really fast on where he is on this stuff. But I think your argument to him, which you'll need to make, I think that's the next phone call we want to set up, is exactly the one you made to Yats. And I'm glad you sort of put him on the spot on where he fits in this scenario. And I'm very glad he said what he said in response.
That was U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Jeffrey Pyatt speaking via telephone on February 4th, 2014.
Good. So I don't think Cleach should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you think, what in terms of him not going into the government, just let him sort of stay out and do his political homework and stuff. I'm just thinking in terms of sort of the process moving ahead, we want to keep the moderate Democrats together. The problem is going to be Tanibok and his guys. And, you know, I'm sure that's part of what Yanukovych is calculating on all of this.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tony Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know. I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay. Good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
My understanding from that call, but you tell me, was that the big three were going into their own meeting and that Yats was going to offer in that context a three-way, you know, the three-plus-one conversation or three-plus-two with you. Is that not how you understood it?
No, I mean, that's what he proposed, but I think just knowing the dynamic that's been with them where Klitschko has been the top dog. He's going to take a while to show up for whatever meeting they've got, and he's probably talking to his guys at this point. So I think you reaching out directly to him helps with the personality management among the three, and it gives you also a chance to move fast on all this stuff and put us behind it before they all sit down and he explains why he doesn't like it.
Okay, good. I'm happy. Why don't you reach out to him and see if he wants to talk before or after?
Okay, will do. Thanks.
Okay, I've now written, one more wrinkle for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I told you this or if I only told Washington this, that when I talked to Jeff Feltman this morning, he had a new name for the UN guy, Robert Seri. Did I write you that this morning?
Yeah, okay. I saw that.
He's now gotten both Seri and Ban Ki-moon to agree that Seri could come in Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the UN help glue it. And, you know, the EU.
No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make it stick together, because you can be pretty sure that if it does start to gain altitude, the Russians will be working behind the scenes to try to torpedo it. And again, the fact that this is out there right now, I'm still trying to figure out in my mind why Yanukovych did that. But in the meantime, there's a Party of Regions faction meeting going on right now, and I'm sure there's a lively argument going on in that group at this point. But anyway, we could land jelly set up on this one if we move fast. So let me work on Klitschko, and if you can just keep, I think we want to try to get somebody with an international personality to come out here and help to midwife this thing. And then the other issue is some kind of outreach to Yanukovych, but we probably regroup on that tomorrow as we see how things start to fall into place.
So on that piece, Jeff, when I wrote the note, Sullivan's come back to me via VFR saying, you need Biden, and I said, probably tomorrow for an attaboy and to get the deets to stick. So
okay.
Biden's willing.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
Despite an agreement reached between senior EU officials and the Ukrainian government in February of last year, a group of armed right-wing nationalists seized control of the government on February 22nd, forcing the elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, and his family to seek refuge over the border with Russia. The group that seized power appointed the very same officials that Nuland and Pyatt had agreed should govern the country going forward. Journalist Wayne Madsen is a former intelligence officer and publisher of WayneMadsenReport.com. We spoke with him via Skype Thursday about his latest article on Ukraine, which points to similarities between the U.S. arming of Kiev's forces and the arming by the Reagan administration of the Nicaraguan Contras. I looked at your article that essentially equates the pending, or really already underway, U.S. military aid to the coup government in Kiev as a throwback to Iran-Contra. You want to make the links for us?
Yeah, well, I mean, the interesting is that John Kerry arrived in Kiev today, with this meme of we're considering providing Ukraine with quote-unquote defensive weapons, they call them non-lethal weapons. I don't know what that means. I've never heard of a non-lethal weapon. this reminded me of what occurred during the 1980s and the dark days of the Reagan-Bush administration when Ed Boland, we had the Boland Amendment, which made it against the law to provide U.S. Assistance, especially weapons, to the Nicaraguan Contras. Yet we know that there was this network established where weapons were just flowing into the Contras, courtesy of all these proprietary CIA airline companies, most notably Southern Air Transport, but a few others as well. And I was alerted to the fact that this Antonov 124, which is known as the Ruslan plane, has been going around the world. Basically, it's the world's largest cargo plane. I believe it's just a wee bit larger than the C-17 Globemaster, which of course is the Air Force plane that can carry tanks around. But the AN-124 apparently has that military cargo plane beat as far as size is concerned. But this plane has been spotted since the coup in Kiev all over the world, ferrying weapons, including helicopters, armored vehicles, ammunition, and all sorts of things into Ukraine via other airports. So it seems like it's, I call it the Flying Dutchman of international aviation. It's quite large, but it has been seen on these covert missions around the world because it's very hard to hide an Antonov 124.
You know, let's start with the offensive defensive terminology here. The facts on the ground, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my belief is that the facts on the ground are that you had an elected government in Kiev, seated in Kiev, that was elected by the whole of Ukraine, with a president who was driven out in a coup in February of last year, and then a government constructed essentially, in fact, to the T, in accordance with the details of instructions that were in an intercepted telephone call between two U.S. officials. And the first act of that government in legislature being to attempt to repeal the language law that the eastern half of the country benefited from, in that its native language, Russian, was one of the two official languages. There was an uprising in the east, and the people in the east essentially said, we don't want to be part of the Ukraine you're building. And the Ukrainian military from Kiev, the military drawn from the western part of the country, has been placing the eastern part of the country under siege since then. The fighting is essentially an offensive from the western part of Ukraine against the eastern part. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And sort of draw an analogy. Picture the CIA overthrowing the government of Canada. Well, maybe some people would like them to overthrow this particular government of Canada we have right now. But say they overthrew the government of Canada, and the first thing the new regime in Ottawa did was to declare French no longer an official language in Quebec. And not only that, but say no longer can public education be conducted in the French language. That is essentially what has happened in Ukraine. And the Western, unfortunately, the Western half is rife with neo-Nazis. Those who follow the neo-Nazi, or the Nazi Ukrainian leader during World War II, who was allied with the German SS, Stefan Bandera. And in the Western Ukrainian city of Lviv, they've actually named their airport Stepan Bandera International Airport. That would be like the Germans naming the old Tempelhof Airport in Berlin the Adolf Hitler International Airport.
Right.
Yet in Ukraine, these particular people, these neo-Nazi militias, are supported militarily and financially by people like Ihor Kolomoisky, the governor of one of the provinces in the east, Ukrainian. But he's a dual Israeli-Ukrainian citizen and an unabashed Zionist. So here he is employing neo-Nazis in his own private battalions that are being sent to eastern Ukraine, and they have been committing all kinds of atrocities against the people of eastern Ukraine. It's also been pretty well proven through intelligence that it was forces allied with Kolomoisky that shot down Malaysian Airlines Flight 17, which of course was also blamed on the Russians. So this is a very nasty business. The U.S. started, the CIA started. One of the officials who was responsible for this coup, Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, and her colleague, the ambassador in U.S. Ambassador in Kiev, Jeffrey Pyatt. These people should be hauled before the International Criminal Court in The Hague and charged with war crimes, because they certainly encouraged this action in Ukraine, overthrowing a democratically elected government. They continue to foment these attacks against the majority Russian-speaking population and ethnic Russian population of eastern Ukraine. That's called ethnic cleansing. It's also known as genocide. And here we have the United States supporting what amounts to war crimes in eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, some of the politicians, like the former president Yulia Tymoshenko, have actually made public statements calling for using nuclear weapons against Russia, incinerating all of the people in the east with nuclear weapons. I mean, that's genocide, I think.
Yeah, that's genocide. Of course, she was in prison by the last government because she's a crook.
Right.
She stole money that didn't. She stole, you know, public money, and only. Only in this weird state that we're in this country, are people like Yulia Tymoshenko, who stole public funds, and her colleague in crime, this guy, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was put in jail by Russia and sent to Siberia for being a tax scofflaw, not paying his taxes. Only in this country are these people considered heroes, and not the white collar criminals they essentially are.
Yeah, so they're saying now that they're considering, you know, that it's one of the options on the table, sending this military aid, defensive, non-lethal, whatever. But in fact, there's already a record of arms transfers to Ukraine from NATO, including out of the mouths of one of the presidential advisors.
Yeah, and we and the Canadians already have sent what they call defensive weapons to Ukraine. So have Poland and other NATO countries. I tracked this AN-124 this huge airplane, which you know has the Ukrainian flag on it. It even has the website of the Ukrainian state firm that controls these aircraft. That's right on the side of the fuselage. This plane has been spotted in, since the coup. So that's about a year ago now. It's been spotted at Philadelphia International Airport, which is not very far from Boeing Rotary Systems, where they make the Sikorsky helicopters. It's been sighted at many other places around the world, well, around the United States anyway. Newark International Airport, very close to two major U.S. Weapons depots, the Naval Weapons Station at Earl, and also the U.S. Army arsenal at Picatinny, in New Jersey. So everywhere you track this particular aircraft, Oklahoma City, near Tinker Air Force Base, Major Air Force Logistics Center, Supply Center. Yeah, everywhere it's been sighted in the United States also is very, very close to major U.S. Weapons depots. And I don't think that's a coincidence whatsoever.
No, yeah, really. Okay, so we're looking at the arming of this Ukrainian or rump Ukraine army that's bleeding personnel, both literally and figuratively. You've got, you know, they're getting killed out on the front lines.
Yeah.
They're also abandoning their posts. They're AWOL way up. The draft that they set for this year that was supposed to be in three stages, drawing 100,000 people, has been failing abysmally. And a month into it, the government itself said that there were already 7,500 people who were being charged with draft dodging.
Yeah.
And of course, the people that are running over the border, Russia supposedly is invading Ukraine, and yet people are escaping from the battle. Ukrainians from the West are escaping from the battle into Russia.
Right.
So all of this going on, nevertheless, there's a major effort by the U.S. and other NATO countries to continue this battle, using, you know, at least to the last Ukrainian, and they're positioning forces. They're moving the rapid deployment force up from 13,000 to 30,000 up to Russia's borders. Do you think there's going to be a hot war between NATO and Russia?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. President Hollande of France and Chancellor Merkel of Germany arrived in Kiev at the same time Kerry was there. And apparently they're arriving with a new peace proposal. They're going to leave Kiev and go to Moscow.
Right, Friday.
I don't know what's in their proposal. I guess we'll find out soon. But I sort of believe that the French have already said they're not going to give any weapons to Ukraine. The defense minister of France said that the other day. And Germany is rather waffling on the issue.
Well, Merkel yesterday on Wednesday said mm-hmm. that there should be no weapons transfers. And the German foreign minister went further and advised the United States not to do it, saying it would have no impact on the outcome except to add to the body count.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, these sanctions against Russia are hurting France and Germany in particular. Right. As a matter of fact, the German economy, which was always thought to be one of the better ones in Europe, is starting to suffer because of the sanctions, because Russia was a huge market, especially for German farmers and small manufacturing, food, you know, the food manufacturers. And that's all suffered as a result of these sanctions on Russia. In other words, the United States doesn't have a lot of trade with Russia. So we're in a good position to listen to warmongers like John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Pyatt. But we're not as dependent on trade with Russia as are countries like France and Germany and Italy and others. So I think the pinch is being felt. Also, the recent Greek elections where the new Greek prime minister and foreign minister have basically come out and said they're totally opposed to these EU sanctions and want them to end. I think now we see a huge wedge being driven not only inside NATO, but also inside the European Union. So, again, this is a situation where the U.S., which has no real vested economic interests in European-Russian trade, is trying to call the shots. And I think some of the European countries are getting wise to it and frankly, getting tired of it.
You know, all that being said, you have an awful lot of personnel and hardware moved right up to the line. And it's a year after the 100th anniversary of the beginning of World War One. Which, you know, started despite the intent of any of the parties, based on accidents, basically, because everything was so pushed into a pressure cooker. And that pressure cooker looks, you know, like snow compared to what's being constructed around Russia right now.
Yeah, not only Russia. On February 19th, Croatia will inaugurate as its president, which is largely a figurehead, but the former Assistant Secretary General of NATO, this woman, Kolinda, and she's already making noise about Croatian designs on still parts of Serbia, right, including the province of Vojvodina, which is largely a Hungarian Hungarian-speaking population. But it looks like they're not done with Serbia, and that's a traditional Russian ally. Where did World War One begin? Yeah, right? In what is now the former Yugoslavia in Sarajevo. But we're again looking at the possibility of more bloodshed in the Balkans as a result of this this crazy NATO policy that started with the breakup of Yugoslavia in the early 90s.
What do you think people should be watching before they start digging their fallout shelters in the backyard?
Well, I would note that the propaganda against Putin is really getting to be ridiculous. Now the surfaces a Naval War College report from 2008 that Putin suffers from Asperger's syndrome. This follows by a few days a report in the British media that said that Putin is a pedophile because he years ago there was a photo of him, I remember my dad doing it to me where, Putin, there was a little boy and he got on his stomach and kind of like, made a certain sound, by blowing air on his stomach.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
A raspberry.
Yes.
He gave
him
a raspberry.
Trying to say that makes Putin a pedophile. Well, it's really rich that the War College would actually have done a report on Putin like that, because it was last year that I reported that one of the national security professors at the War College had texted a photograph of his own genitalia out. I don't think the Naval War College has any credibility after that. And I would just put this down to crude CIA propaganda against the Russian president. It's almost comical. But, the people that are running the CIA now are so amateurish that, the CIA, our father's CIA, right? The one that took on Nikita Khrushchev would have never started rumors like that about, Mr. Khrushchev or Mr. Brezhnev. This is how infantile and childish the CIA is today. What a revolting organization. They should actually just all resign en masse and seek mental health treatment.
Yeah. If you look at Wikipedia under Asperger's syndrome, it says that it's, within the autism spectrum, which I know that actually separately, is characterized by significant difficulties in social interaction and nonverbal communication, alongside restricted and repetitive patterns of behavior and interest. Now, in terms of nonverbal communication, you would say the U.S., of course, ascribes every act of the Russian state as a personal act of Putin. So yeah. One must conclude from that, or what follows from that, is that Russian foreign policy is Putin's creature.
Yeah.
Do you think Russian foreign policy, for example, with the U.S. Threatened invasion of Syria a couple of years ago, shows significant difficulties in nonverbal communication?
Yeah, I think, as a matter of fact, look, Putin is only carrying out the wishes of the Russian people. He's still very popular over there. As a matter of fact, since the Ukraine, his poll numbers have gone sky high. Obama would wish for Putin's poll numbers. Putin's is in the 70s, where, Obama's, depending on what day of the week it is hovering either 50% or below, usually below. If we want to look at the master of neurolinguistics, let's look at Mr. Obama, not Mr. Putin. It's Mr. Obama that seems to excel at the art of neurolinguistics. After all, that was part of his training. And I always alleged he's a creature of the CIA, an invention of the CIA. But I think when they talk about Putin not being able to get, communicate with others, remember, Putin went to the G20 summit in Brisbane, Australia, and they ostracized him. He had to sit at his own table to eat lunch after he went through the line with his buffet, with the buffet line with his plate. Well, who's responsible for that non-communications? That was all these clowns that went to the G20 conference, people like, Australian Prime Minister Abbott and Canadian Prime Minister Harper and the rest of those. Western dunces that were over there.
Right. All right, Wayne Mattson, thank you very much.
Anytime.
Meanwhile, relief workers in eastern Ukraine's Donetsk region have been scrambling to deliver urgent aid to people displaced by the heavy fighting in the area. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has teams on the ground assisting the local populations in areas close to the front lines. Government forces have been battling separatists over control of key towns in the eastern part of the country since last April. UNHCR spokesperson William Spindler told Jocelyn Sambira that this puts the number of internally displaced people countrywide at close to a million.
Well, the actual figure, it's not yet known, but the local authorities have so far registered some 980,000 people, and more are being registered every day. Some of these people are recently displaced, which leads us to believe that the actual number might be over a million displaced people inside Ukraine. To this, we need to add those Ukrainians who have fled to neighboring countries, such as Russia, Belarus, Moldova, Poland, Hungary, Romania, which we estimate to be around 600,000 since February 2014.
That's a huge number of people. You have teams on the ground. What are they telling you about the situation?
Well, our teams report that the fighting going on at the moment in the Donetsk region has resulted in massive destruction of buildings and infrastructure in that area and in the collapse of the basic services, which creates conditions of hardship to the civilian population. Many of them are hiding in basements and in makeshift bomb shelters under heavy bombardment. And this is particularly the case in the area around Donetsk, in the town of Debaltseve, and other towns nearby, which are near Donetsk. Debaltseve is between Donetsk and Lugansk.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.